Hello, this is Rita Schulte with excerpts from the Bloomington Pantograph for Saturday, September 19th, Sunday, September 20th, and Monday, September 21st. And we'll begin part one with Saturday's paper, page A1. Headline reads, YMCA to break ground. Ground will be broken on Tuesday for a facility that collaborators hope will feed some physical, therapeutic, social, and spiritual needs in the Bloomington Normal area. Construction will begin on a new, larger Bloomington Normal YMCA building, which will include programs by Easter Seals Central Illinois and OSF Healthcare St. Joseph Medical Center on the St. Joseph campus, YMCA Director B.J. Wilkin told the Pantograph on Friday. The 76,000 square foot $23 million building and a parking lot will be built at 202 St. Joseph Drive in Bloomington on 6 acres donated by OSF Healthcare to the YMCA to the south of the hospital and to the east of OSF Healthcare Center for Health. There is no question that this will change the face of the YMCA in the community, Wilkin said. Not only will the new building have more space for existing and new YMCA programs, but it will include 7,000 square feet for Easter Seals therapy services and opportunities for collaboration with St. Joseph on programs such as diabetes prevention, Wilkin said. Without Easter Seals and OSF, this project just doesn't happen, Wilkin said. The success of this fundraising campaign was the result of this collaboration. The fact that we have gotten this far is a true testament to the generosity of our community, said St. Joseph President Lynn Fulton. I'm excited to welcome the YMCA to our neighborhood, Fulton said. Having this amazing service organization right next door will be a great resource for our mission partners at OSF Healthcare St. Joseph, as well as for our patients. I look forward to working together to improve health and well-being in our community. Easter Seals Central Illinois President and CEO Steve Thompson said, Easter Seals is excited to be part of this transformative collaboration with the YMCA. This project further underscores our ongoing commitment to meaningful collaboration and to providing quality programs and facilities to those we serve. I am confident this best-in-class facility will be a model for accessible, inclusive health and wellness programs and a place where everyone has the opportunity to reach their full potential. YMCA, OSF, and Easter Seals announced their idea for the new building in April 2018 and set a fundraising goal of $16 million. But $19,989,000 had been raised as of Friday from 379 donors. I really believe this was God having a hand in this, Wilkin said. We set a campaign goal of $16 million. To raise this kind of money speaks volumes to this community and what they value. I'm gratified that donors would step up in this way. The nearly $20 million allows the YMCA to begin construction on 69,000 square feet. The YMCA hopes to raise another $1.2 million for construction of a second gymnasium, which would bring the building to 76,000 square feet, Wilkin said. The YMCA could finance the balance needed to reach $23 million, he said. YMCA, Easter Seals, and OSF hope that the building will open in spring 2022, but the YMCA is not planning to abandon its existing building at 602 South Main Street in Bloomington, where the organization has run out of space and can't expand. While the YMCA can't afford to maintain two buildings on its own, Wilkin hopes to collaborate with the City of Bloomington to continue to offer youth programming, such as youth sports, in the existing Y Buildings gym, Wilkins said. We continue to be in talks with the City of Bloomington on how the City and the Y might work together, such as sharing building operating costs, so the Y could continue to provide youth programming here, Wilkins said. We recognize that gym space in our community is at a premium, especially in the winter months. The new building would include 7,000 square feet leased by Easter Seals to relocate its Bloomington Normal Pediatric Physical, Occupational, Speech, and Feeding Therapy programs, autism services including ABA, Applied Behavior Analysis, and individual and family counseling from 2404 East Empire Street to the new building. YMCA amenities would include one gym and possibly the second gym later, one competition pool, one warm water recreation pool, a universal all-gender locker room to accommodate parents with different sex children, and the LGBTQ communities, as well as traditional men's and women's locker rooms, a community meeting room, an intergenerational area that could be used for relaxation and socializing by seniors early in the day, and for socializing, gaming, and homework by teens later in the day, a child care area, a youth and family adventure area that would include indoor climbing apparatus and an outdoor playground, a small chapel, a wellness center that would include outdoor group fitness space, traditional strength and cardio equipment, functional and group training areas, and three group exercise studios. And in a nod to COVID-19, hand-washing sinks in the wellness center. This building is another tool for the YMCA to deliver on our mission to be able to provide programs for youth development, healthy living, and social responsibility, Wilkins said. Also from page A1 on Saturday's paper, the headline reads, Warning List Drops McLean County. McLean County's improving COVID-19 numbers resulted in the county being removed from Illinois Department of Public Health's COVID-19 warning list on Friday afternoon. But DeWitt County's worsening COVID numbers placed that county on the list. And the virus claimed two more lives in Tazewell County and another life in LaSalle County. The progress that we have seen is testament to what this community can accomplish with a unified response when we work together toward a common goal, McLean County Health Department Administrator Jessica McKnight told the Pantograph. I know how hard the staff of McLean County Health Department are working to protect and promote health every day, McKnight said. I ask that we keep taking this virus seriously and continue to do everything we can to keep each other safe. It's important that we stay on track and don't become complacent. We have the power to reduce the further spread of the virus by washing our hands, wearing our face coverings, and watching our distance. But DeWitt County was among 24 Illinois counties placed on the warning list. The county was placed on the list for three reasons, according to David Remmert, administrator of the DeWitt-Piatt Bi-County Health Department. In the past week, the county's COVID incidence rate has increased from 101 per 100,000 people to 108. The test positivity rate has risen from 5.2 to 8.6%, and the number of tests performed has dropped from 308 to 244. I was hopeful we could manage our way through this pandemic without appearing on the warning list, but that isn't the case here, Remmert said. He noted that Labor Day weekend gatherings contributed to the spike in DeWitt County COVID cases. Remmert encouraged mask wearing, maintaining social distancing, and refraining from attending indoor events. The health department has hired three more people to keep up with contact tracing of people who have tested positive for COVID. and their close contacts, has encouraged restaurants to implement stricter protocols, and wants people whose immune system is compromised to stay home as much as possible. Now is the time for both of our counties, DeWitt and Piatt, to double down on their personal efforts to stop the spread of this disease, Remmert said. Look, this is a highly contagious disease, and while you may not necessarily have anything more than mild symptoms, you are capable of transmitting it to others. I worry about the spread to vulnerable populations. McLean County Health Department reported 50 new COVID cases on Friday, meaning that 196 more people have been diagnosed so far this week, 273 in the past 7 days, and 3,075 since March 19th. Of those, 1,238 people are isolating at home, 7 are hospitalized with 1 in intensive care, and 1,811 people have recovered. McLean County has reported 19 coronavirus-related deaths. The most recent was on Thursday. The county's rolling 7-day positivity rate was 5% through Thursday. That's a marked decrease from the 9.4% rate reported on September 11th. The county's cumulative positivity rate, based on more than 64,600 tests since March, is 4.8%. Illinois State University reported Friday that during the previous 7 days, 30 students had tested positive of 931 students tested on campus for a positivity rate of 3.2%. That continued a decline in the rate that began earlier this week after double-digit rates were reported in the previous 2 weeks. Since testing began on campus on August 17th, 1,402 students have tested positive. Of 206 students tested, ISU reported Friday. That's a positivity rate of 17%, compared with the 20% rate reported last week. There were 534 people tested Thursday at the McLean County Fairgrounds community testing site, operated by Roditis, according to the county's Emergency Management Agency. And another front page article from Saturday's paper, USD adds $14 billion in aid for farmers. The federal government said Friday that it will give farmers an additional $14 billion to compensate them for the difficulties they've experienced selling crops, milk, and meat because of the coronavirus pandemic. The U.S. Department of Agriculture released details of its plan that said it will provide financial assistance that gives producers the ability to absorb increased marketing costs associated with the COVID pandemic. President Donald Trump first mentioned the aid in a speech Thursday night in Wisconsin, a presidential battleground state that is considered vital for his chances to win a second term. The additional payments illustrate the importance of farmers as a voting bloc to Trump's reelection. He addressed them in Wisconsin directly, saying, "You gotta love Trump," and promising favorable trade and regulatory changes, as well as tax cuts. "Now we have to get 4 more years to cement it and do the additional things," he said. The coronavirus pandemic has created several problems for farmers. Lowered availability of labor has reduced crop and livestock production, as well as processing capacity of meatpacking plants and other facilities. These problems have pushed prices that farmers receive for commodities lower. Now from Sunday's paper, page 1, headline reads, "At Triage Center, We Know People Need Help." McLean County residents in a mental health crisis have another place to get help. The first 6 months of operations for the McLean County Triage Center saw 21 clients served, a number officials attribute to shelter-in-place guidelines that came with COVID-19. Now that many of those restrictions have been lifted, and with the pandemic creating extra economic and emotional stress for many people, The county's Behavioral Health Coordinating Council supervisor is confident numbers will increase. I think people really did adhere to shelter in place, Tricia Mallett said on Wednesday after a tour of the triage center located at the southwest corner of the first floor of the McLean County Health Department building, 200 West Front Street in Bloomington. But we know people need help, she said. Our numbers are picking up now. I don't think the number is reflective of the need for triage in this county. Agreeing was a representative of another agency that also serves residents in mental health crises. I am hoping it, the triage center, will be used more now that people know about it, said Megan Mosser, crisis program manager for the McLean County Center for Human Services. The triage center opened March 16th, about when the state shelter-in-place guidelines took effect. The center, which last month expanded its hours to 7:30 a.m. to 3 a.m., 365 days a year, is for people 18 and older experiencing a mental health crisis. Advocates say the center gives people a place to go other than the hospital or jail when they need it most. All clients will be seen regardless of insurance or income status, Mallett said, adding that it offers a safe, supportive place where someone can listen to them and provide resources. While the largest percentage of people bring themselves to the triage center, others are brought by law enforcement, by the CHS Mobile Crisis Team, by family or friends, or are referred by Chestnut Health Systems. People experiencing suicidal feelings are still directed to hospital emergency departments, but the center serves people who are dealing with extreme anxiety, depression, or a panic attack. How it works. When a person arrives, a visitor's aide screens the person for COVID symptoms. While no one yet has presented with symptoms, if that happens, the aide would discuss with the person whether they should return home and call PATH at 211 or go to the emergency department, Mallett said. A peer support person with experience with mental illness welcomes the client to the center's living room, where there are couches, coloring materials, card games, magazines, fidget items, and beverages. A triage center specialist does an assessment, works with the client on interventions that can help, and links them to resources that can assist after they leave the center. In the living room, clients can gather their thoughts and de-escalate. While they are welcome to stay as long as 23 hours, 96% leave within 4. About half return home, she said. Others are admitted to a hospital or Chestnut's crisis residential unit, where they can stay as long as 14 days. Or they are taken to a homeless shelter, Mallott said. Client survey results indicate the service has been a success. Mosser said the triage center complements the CHS Mobile Crisis Team, which works with people in the field, providing behavioral health assessments, de-escalation, and referrals for ongoing services for people who are having suicidal or homicidal thoughts, are having a panic attack, or having manic or psychotic symptoms. We can talk with people over the phone or can go to people's homes, doctor's offices, schools, hospitals, or the jail, Mosser said. The team had about 2,200 calls or visits during the first 6 months of this year. We are mobile, Mosser said. The triage center is a place people can go. We can refer people to the triage center. They complement each other, Mosser said of triage and the crisis team. Our goal is for both to provide services in a less restrictive environment and keep people out of the emergency department and jail unless they need to be there. The triage center makes the community's crisis response system, PATH, mobile crisis team, the triage center, Chestnut's crisis residential unit, more robust, Mosser said. Another Young County Behavioral Health Program is Frequent User System Engagement, or FUSE. Launched last fall, it aims to support people with severe and chronic mental illness, such as schizophrenia, bipolar disorder, or major depressive disorder, who have frequent encounters with law enforcement, emergency departments, and homeless services. The program is on the fourth floor of the Health Department building, but its staff are also available to talk with participants in the field or over the phone, Mallett said. Some are willing and eager to engage, Mallett said of the potential participants contacted by the program staff. Some are reluctant. People who agree to participate and consent to treatment work with Fuse staff on a case management plan that includes prescription medication, recovery support, and substance abuse treatment and housing if needed. For example, three people applied for and received vouchers through the Bloomington Housing Authority with assistance from Fuse staff. The vouchers allow people with disability and who are at risk of homelessness or institutionalization to live in Section 8 housing, according to Mallett and Jeremy Hayes, executive director of the Housing Authority. The tenants are responsible for 30% of their monthly income for rent. People with severe and persistent mental illness struggle to maintain safe, affordable housing, Hayes said. Landlords are more comfortable renting to them when an organization or caseworker supports the tenant. Having intensive and on-site support is oftentimes the difference between someone staying housed or being on the street or in an undesirable situation, Hayes said. That in-depth and consistent support that Fuse can offer is very beneficial to the individual and the county as a whole. While Mallett hoped Fuse would serve 10 people during the first year, the program has only 4 participants so far because the program put a hold on new clients during the first several months of the COVID pandemic. I'm hoping that we have 2 or more by the end of the year, she said. Most of our participants are likely to be with us long term. Money for the McLean County Triage Center, Fuse, and the county's other mental health services come from the shared sales tax revenue from the intergovernmental agreement between McLean County, the City of Bloomington, and the Town of Normal. About $1.73 million was budgeted for county mental health services this year. I think it's encouraging that our county, in the last few years, has made progress in resources for mental health, Hayes said. Among services is the annual Fall McLean County Behavioral Health Community Forum. Because of the COVID-19 pandemic, the forum this fall will be done virtually rather than in person, Mallett said. Information will be released soon, she said. From page A4 of Sunday's paper, our headline reads, Lincoln College President Addresses Bigoted Behavior. Social media posts with veiled threats and negative comments characterized as racist plus other incidents prompted the leader of Lincoln College to post a message on the school's website calling for people to band together to offer support and encouragement to one another. In the message, President David Gerlach wrote, "Unfortunately, the bigoted behavior has not been limited to online activities. Our students have also had to endure visitors displaying Confederate flags driving through the campus and incidents of shouting insults and threats. This behavior would be appalling in any community, but it is incomprehensible how anyone living in a city named for Abraham Lincoln could display flags that pay tribute to those who tried to destroy our nation." Gerlach announced that comments from a small number of people and don't represent the community as a whole. However, for students who are young and living away from home for the first time, the comments and actions can make them feel unwelcome, he said. Social media comments do not mention the race of students, but use terms such as animals and refer to how they are dressed, gather in groups and walk slowly across the street like they own the place. One commenter suggested, "I just drive your normal speed and get as close as you can without hitting them." Elaine Antonin, founder of Resist Racism Logan County, said some people don't like change. There's a lot of animosity toward college students, and a lot of college students are people of color, Antonin said. We are a white-dominated town. About 60% of the student body at Lincoln College is black or Hispanic, while the city of Lincoln is about 90% white, according to the Census Bureau. Antonin's group raised money for a billboard saying, "Hate is not welcome here," that went up in July on Woodlawn Avenue by the Logan County Fairgrounds. Enough money was raised through GoFundMe to keep the billboard up for at least 6 months, she said. With all that's been going on, people are a lot more amped up emotionally on both sides, Antonin said. Lincoln Mayor Tracy Welch was unable to be reached for comment. However, at a meeting in June when he was sworn in as mayor, Welch read a statement on behalf of the city thanking those attending recent rally, prayer vigils, and gatherings against racism and in support of Black Lives Matter. The city of Lincoln stands with you to denounce racism and racial discrimination in all forms, said Welch. We stand by peaceful and orderly protests and believe that hatred, bigotry, and racism have no place in our city. In an interview with the Pantograph, Gerlach called social media posts absolutely disheartening and disquieting. He questioned the judgment of individuals making such comments and taking such actions. Read a book. Read 5 books about the Civil War and the legacy of what our country's working through, he said. We are proud of our diversity, said Gerlach, who characterized the comments and actions as coming from an unfortunate small group of individuals. He said, I have a number of people reach out and ask how they can help. Many have written positive messages on social media, and a church group is coming to campus to write messages of appreciation with sidewalk chalk, said Gerlach. Antonin said it's important to continue to speak out against racist comments and actions so more community members who are offended will speak up. And a little crime news here. A man and woman face multiple drug charges. A Bloomington man and woman face multiple drug charges following a Bloomington Police Department investigation. Nathaniel E. Dawson, 39, is charged with 4 counts of drug delivery, unlawful delivery of 1 to 15 grams of cocaine, unlawful delivery of less than 1 gram of cocaine, and 2 counts of unlawful delivery of less than 1 gram of heroin. He also faces 3 charges related to drug possession: unlawful possession of 15 to 100 grams of cocaine with the intent to deliver, unlawful possession of 1 to 15 grams of cocaine, and unlawful possession of 1 to 5 grams of heroin. Dawson is also charged with 2 counts of unlawful possession of a firearm by a felon. Timothy S. Gunn, 39, is charged with unlawful possession of cocaine with intent to deliver, cocaine with intent to deliver, and unlawful possession of 1 to 15 grams of heroin. She is also charged with unlawful possession of a firearm by a felon and permitting unlawful use of a building, which, according to court documents, is related to her allowing her apartment to be used by Dawson for the delivery of controlled substances. Both are jailed in lieu of posting $50,000 in bail and $20,000 in bail. This has been Rita Schulte. I've been reading part 1 of the Pantograph for Saturday, September 19th, Sunday, September 20th, and Monday, September 21st. I will be right back with part 2 in just a few moments, so please stand by.